Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Love, Lust, and Laughter. Your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, has a very special guest today, psychologist Dr. Lori Buckley of the Center for Relationship, Marriage, and Sex Therapy. It's her belief that the challenges we experience in life can be a rich resource through which the process of growth can take shape. And Lori believes that therapy is a good tool for helping many people move from simply coping and surviving to living an empowered and fulfilling life. Dr. Lori is an internationally known member of Sexual Advice Columnist Advisory Council, member for the Sinclair Institute, frequent guest on many radio shows, including one like this, which happens to be the same one I'm talking about, and is the host of Personal Life Media's podcast show On the Minds of Men. She's a member of the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, the Society of the Study of Scientific Sexuality, the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, and the host of her own show, Ally Talk Show Radio's Sexy Stuff Live. And like me, she is a person who enjoys sidekicks on occasion. Her own Mark Phelan is her sidekick, and I am just sidekicking around for our host, Dr. Diana Wiley. And for those of the opposite gender, not only are Drs. Buckley and Wiley highly skilled, intelligent, compassionate professional therapists, they're also a couple of really hot chicks. I now turn you over to the really hot chick in charge, Dr. Diana.
You're a hot chick.
My mouth is exhausted from all that speech.
Yeah, Dr.
Lori
Buckley.
I'll go into my refractory period now, okay? Just a
Dr. Lori Buckley definitely is a hot chick. She's gorgeous, and she's a good friend and a colleague. And we discovered in our sort of pre-interview that we have a lot in common, don't we? Dr. Lori Buckley, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be on your show. It's
Thank
great.
You.
It's fun to just be able to have some time to chat with you. And, yeah, it is amazing how many things we actually have in common.
Yes. And do you want to mention some of them for our listening audience?
Opposable thumbs. You both have opposable thumbs, right?
Yes, we do. That
we
and
do.
More.
We do. And like you said, we're both hot chicks. But in addition to that, while we both are passionate about what we do and working with couples and individuals to help them improve their relationships and certainly their sex life, we're both therapists. We both have a love of media and use it to get our message across, and we actually have worked together on some educational videos over at the Sinclair Institute through bettersex.com, and that was so much fun to do. And we both
have a
radio show.
And that was so much fun, yes.
Yeah.
Great Sex for a Lifetime, targeted at baby boomers.
That's right, Better Sex for a Lifetime, Part 1 and 2, that which was really well done, and were we in the same room at the same time? I'm not sure.
At times, yes.
Yes, we saw each other.
I mean, we weren't on camera at the same time, but we
right.
were in the same room, and I would look at the monitor and marvel at how polished and poised and informative you are, Lori.
At you, Diana.
Thank
back
you, honey.
Well, yeah, and we also, I believe, from the shows I've heard that you've done and from the talks we've had and certainly from the videos that I've seen you in mm-hmm. as an expert, we share a lot of the same ideas and beliefs. I mean, I don't think we're far off on how we actually approach sex therapy.
Indeed, and we are going to spend a good part of this show talking about how we approach sex therapy, and we thought it would be interesting for our listening audience to know what we've learned as working as a sex therapist. So what Lori's learned, what I've learned, and building on the work of Masters and Johnson, Dr. Lori and myself, I think, have learned that much of people's dissatisfactions about sex come from misinformation, negative attitudes, anxiety, and poor communication.
Yeah, and unrealistic expectations.
Unrealistic expectations. That's right.
You know, I don't know if you've talked about this on your show, but what I find is a lot of people, when I tell them I'm a sex therapist, they don't actually know what that means. They have all kinds of ideas.
they might assume that you're a surrogate, for example.
Exactly. So let's clarify exactly what we do. I think that's mm-hmm. important. And we are both licensed therapists,
yes.
which means that, you know, we're really not allowed to touch our clients. So there is no sex either with us and our clients or between our clients in the room.
That's
we don't
right.
do that, right? We specifically talk, and I believe you do as well, give the couples or individuals really specific assignments or what we like to call sexercises to do at home, things that they can do at home to really expand and increase their sexual response and pleasure.
Exactly. And then they get to come back and tell us how the home play, as I sometimes call it,
right.
assignments went.
Yeah.
And if they didn't do it, then we get to explore the resistance.
Exactly. What stopped them? Yeah.
What stopped them? And what I've discovered, one of the things I've discovered in the almost 30 years that I've been counseling couples, is that couples don't always want what they say they want in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, deeper emotional conflicts need to be uncovered
right.
and dealt with in order to help couples fully enjoy sexual expressions in a loving relationship. And haven't you found, Dr. Lori, that sometimes the very complaint some people insist they want to get over often protects them from a deeper problem? So
right.
sometimes that's the resistance.
Well, people will come in, and this happens often, and the initial session, they'll tell me, because I always ask them to describe to me their relationship, and they'll say things like, we have the best relationship. Our relationship is great. It's just the sex part.
Mm.
And they'll both say that, and rarely is that the case, right?
That's right. And sometimes they're so comfortable with each other that they're more like sister and brother.
Right.
And so the inherent incestual taboo for sister-brother relationships, even though they're not, actually, affects how they're going to relate to each other sexually, erotically.
Yeah.
Those are the toughest couples.
Yeah, right, right. So they have this sort of familial relationship,
mm-hmm.
which is lovely, but very anti-erotic.
Very anti-erotic, yeah.
Yeah, and especially if they have a history, you know, maybe being sexualized when they were younger. It doesn't even have to be abuse, but maybe they were just, there weren't very solid boundaries between them and a parent, and it was just a little too uncomfortable for them, then it can even be worse. It could exacerbate that
That's true. The sexualized part, and you're right, it doesn't have to be abuse. Of course, when there's actual sexual abuse, those can be some of the most difficult cases, especially I found that with women, as little girls, if they're abused, their sense of themselves, their boundaries is often compromised, and so they have trouble with orgasm, they have trouble letting go, they have trouble surrendering.
Yeah.
Because they need to feel like they're in control because they felt so out of control when they were little girls.
Right, right. And just really having you say that to them, you know, it's very sort of liberating where they can, and validating where they can feel, oh, okay, that makes sense. I can
mm-hmm.
understand that, and then they can move forward. So there is sometimes some therapy, some deeper therapy that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's just really giving them permission or information or skills and really almost like a structured roadmap of how to get to where it is that they want to go.
I like the way you put it, structured roadmap. And so
or
often
treasure map, even better, right?
A what map?
A treasure map.
A treasure map.
To get to the gold. Yeah.
and what I use that analogy sometimes where one person is having trouble with communicating needs or desires to the other, and I say, you know, it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues.
Right.
Billy,
yeah.
Can you relate to that, maybe as a pirate or not?
I certainly can. I like where you buried the map, me darling.
Ah, the map.
I've got the shovel. Let's go dig it.
Well, yeah, first you got to find the map before you can find the treasure.
There you go.
It's hard to get to that map.
I got a feeling the map is
people
buried in the treasure.
The map is buried in. Well, then that's just not right.
Well, that's the way a pirate takes it. Yo-ho. But
Trouble is they probably have a bottle of rum beforehand, which tends to get the map all sort of torn apart and things. So, yes, perhaps we should follow instructions first.
Yeah, and the rum can be helpful sometimes, right?
A little, right. A little.
A bottle,
in moderation.
Not so much. Probably not going to be a good idea.
No, that's right. Well, actually, speaking of maps, remember John Money's work. He talked about love maps. What do you know about love maps, Dr. Laurie?
I studied love maps in school. So it's not something that I actually refer to, you know, as a love map. I probably use some of it in my work, but not really in a tangible way or explicit way.
Yeah.
I find that, and this is probably what you do too, constantly reading, constantly studying, you know, doing the work and going to workshops. I mean, I'm a big information education junkie. And what ends up happening is, you know, you pick a little of this and you pick a little of that. It's like what you think works. And really, with every person we see, we have to really think what is going to be best for them. So, you know, it comes to, like, do I follow, you know, Gottman's work or the love maps or you name it, Freud. No, not at all. But, you know, any of them, it's kind of like, well, who do I follow? What's my orientation? We talked a little bit about this when we were speaking on the phone before. A lot of the work in sex therapy and in relationship work is very cognitive and behavioral. Sometimes, like we were just talking about, you need to get a little dynamic. You need to understand a little bit about the history. And what I like to say is I like to acknowledge it. We don't need to analyze it, but at least acknowledge what might be affecting your relationship currently. And then once it's acknowledged, then we can be here and now and move forward.
But here and now and move forward. And so I'm the same way as sort of eclectic.
Exactly, or integrative.
So what the person needs. Now, I took a 2-day intensive last month from Dr. David Snarch, and he's big on differentiation. And differentiation involves learning to balance your individuality. That would be your separateness with your emotional connection to somebody else.
Right.
That would be the togetherness. And I think one of the best things that he says is that you give up the fantasy that the other person is going to complete you. And
yes,
so your goal changes from getting someone to love you to becoming someone capable of loving. And I'm going to quote J. Paul Getty here, and maybe Bill can say it again, but in a J. Paul Getty voice. And what he said, he lamented, he said, "I hate to be a failure. I hate and regret the failure of all my marriages. I would gladly give all of my millions for just one lasting marital success."
Wow.
And, Bill, can you shorten that, as J. Paul Getty might have said?
I certainly can.
Yes.
"Darling, you there on the corner of Wall Street and Broad. I have a $100 bill here, but I'd gladly trade it for a lifetime if you'll just manage to adjust to me the way I want you to on my terms, assuming you can teach me everything for a lifetime."
That's probably a version.
Not bad.
It's
a version. Yeah, and I've studied with Snarch, too. And, you know, differentiation, Snarch didn't actually develop. I think that actually came from Bowen, but Snarch
was
such a pioneer for sex therapy and really incorporating the two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such a big word, but really what it does mean is when we are not so influenced by what our partner says and does, when we can hold our own. So just because our partner's having a bad day or they say something that doesn't feel good to us, we don't go down with them. You know, we're able to stay strong and accept that they may think differently or do things differently than us and still love. And so that's where you said be able to still love in spite of the things that don't actually feel loving, but often isn't really about us. It's about something that's going on for our partner. And it's a hard thing to do, to really accept that, you know, our prince charming or princess isn't there, that our soulmate isn't the one that's going to save us or complete us or make us happy. Because the truth is, relationships are difficult. We're dealing with two different people who have very different ideas. And I'm not even talking about gender, because while there are some differences in male and female, I think there's more differences in people.
Very true. I'm remembering that some years ago with Dr. Maria Flaherty, I co-led for quite a few years two women sexuality groups, and all of these women had experienced sexual abuse, and most of them were having trouble with orgasm. And I remember one of the themes was, you can say this with a smile, someday my prince will come, and so will I.
I love it. That's so great.
That's, you know, but Dr. Snartz says that intimacy involves being open, revealing oneself without any assurance of acceptance or reciprocity from the other.
Yeah, that's not easy.
It's not easy because you have to stand on your own two feet,
right,
and self-soothe, calm yourself down.
Yeah, it's a really huge skill when you're working with couples. When they can learn that, to stand strong and not rely on that other person to be feeling whatever it is they're feeling, because, you know, if they're like a chameleon where they are changing their mood depending on their partner or what they're getting from their partner, I mean, come on, it's going to be problematic. There's no question about that. That's a difficult thing to do. So being strong oftentimes will influence our partner also when we're accepting and able to stay happy and loving in spite of conflict, that will actually, while we can't count on any sort of outcome, you know, it will influence our partner and in a positive way, and they'll be a better partner. So when we're a better partner, we will most oftentimes have a better partner.
That's right. And so inherent in all of this is self-confidence and saying what you want without apology. And I think when this happens, that the people are more likely to enjoy sex more when two people start to feel more authentic, more successful in the relationship while still getting what they want. They become closer.
Yeah, no question. And especially when it comes to sex, I mean, talking about what you want and talking about difficult subjects is hard in a relationship. But then when you add in talking about sexual desires or wants, then it reaches a whole other level, because we learn from very early on, we get these messages, it's not really an okay thing to talk about. And when they are able to talk about sex, when they do that, even though it might be a difficult thing, it really does take their relationship and their intimacy to another level. What do you tell clients when they come in and they say, oh, you know, we don't really talk about sex, it doesn't feel comfortable? Because, I mean, you hear that a lot, right? I know I do.
Do hear a lot, and I'll say, well, you've made the first step by coming here, because I can, for you as your therapist, model good, clear communication about sexuality. And some of these folks come in and they've never had a vocabulary for sexual parts. They still are sort of back as a kid, where they'll say pee-pee instead of penis, or, you know, some juvenile sort of name.
Right, not very sexy.
Not very sexy.
Yeah, and neither is penis and vagina,
no.
Right, or even vulva.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right, giving them that vocabulary and you doing it in front of them, it's really a gift that you can give them by doing that, you know?
First of all, let's make the thing sound sexy. This, sir, is your Ratgolian bongo tonsil. And that, young lady, is your Gangatune shad splendor. Now, we have some really erotic terms, we can get busy. Okay, maybe we have to revise it further, but...
You know, it could work for some people. Better than
that's
weenie.
That's what I'm afraid
I'll
of.
I'll give you that. What do you call yours?
Pelsidender. It started from a sort of a, we were at, honey, it's okay, it's just a couple million people listening, they're not taking notes, and I'm changing my innocence to protect my name.
Your innocence, as if you had any.
One day when we were sort of in a playful mood, I
sort of looked down, and he was looking up at me and looking over at her, and I just said, "Hello, my name is Pelsadender. I'm the good doctor's assistant." And somehow Pelsadender stuck, and it became Pelsy, and then his lab assistant, Pelsy, had a lab assistant named Stretchy. "Hello, Pelsy. Hello, Stretchy." But I fear I digress too much. I have the right to remain silent. I have the right to have an attorney present during questioning, and I'm wearing a lab coat made of buttered leather elephant skins.
I can
oh,
be
my,
what
Bill.
I
Well,
I'll be much more mindful.
The truth
my
is...
My wife said, "Honey, there was no lifeguard in your gene pool."
Oh, no lifeguard in your gene pool. That probably is true.
Wait at your own risk.
Help
rescue him.
But actually, giving a fun name to the penis or to the vulva vagina can ease up some people's anxiety. Because then they get, it helps them shift into a more playful mode.
Right.
And that actually makes me think about one survey. This addresses, some people wonder about sex therapists' private sex lives.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and one survey was done, and sex therapists reported that they didn't necessarily have wilder sex lives, that they just do it without anxiety. And this is a result of all the knowledge we have about sex.
You know, that's really it. I think people have this image, and as you know, my husband is a sex educator.
Well, we had him on the show, Mark Schoen.
Yes, Dr. Mark Schoen. I mean,
yes.
People say when they hear, you know, what we both do, I think they, well, I don't just think, they actually state it out loud,
right.
Some of them. Some of them, you could just see it by the looks in their faces, that we are, you know, swinging from chandeliers and having
right.
wild orgies and all of those things. And what I say is, yeah, you know, we actually do have amazing, wonderful sex,
mm-hmm.
but it's not because we're so over the top. It really is what you said. We just feel really comfortable talking about it. We have no
right.
problems talking about it or even laughing about it.
And
know?
Laughing, too, yes. And Bill no doubt has a comment here.
Well, yes, if you take the next experience of sans chandelier and just say, "Honey, from now on, you shall call yourself Ratgolian Bongo Tonsils," and see if he says, "No, no, I prefer Pelsadender." We have a whole list of names and hosts. The naming of the thing, as Gertrude Stein said, by a rose is a rose is a rose. But, of course, some days a rose is a rose is a vulva is a pudenda is a... There's just not so many. How about Macarena? You're right. We need to come up with better naming. But if you could have an orgy of naming, by the time you're through, you might be so absolutely overcome with desire, you just might end up having a vowel movement.
A vowel? Oh, okay.
Well,
ooh,
that is
ooh,
I've never heard that. But you know what? It is about the fun. And how fun is it to sit down and go, "Okay, look, we need to come up with some great names. You know, I don't know what to call it, and nothing feels really comfortable. So rather than me saying, you know, down there or my wee-wee, let's come up with something really fun that is between us." And it can be fun, too, because you can refer to those, you know, having that language. You could refer to sex or body parts or whatever it may be in front of a whole group of people, and they won't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly. It's intimate between the two of you.
Yeah.
And so it's your own special language. That kind of leads me into another thing that I've discovered after 30 years of counseling couples, that sex doesn't always come naturally. You know, some people assume that good sex just happens. And if it did, in fact, people wouldn't have so many sexual problems. As you and I know, lots of people have them. Probably more than half of all couples do. And no one would need sex therapy to learn more positive attitudes and behaviors. And so it doesn't come naturally, but I have found, Dr. Lori, that some sex therapy techniques seem to at least initially make sex mechanical, but then kind of like fixing a car, you need to take the parts apart before it can run smoothly again.
Yeah, you know, I like to use the metaphor of, you know, learning a musical instrument to play like a piano, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, when you don't know how to play the piano, but you want to make beautiful music, unfortunately, at first, you need to sit down, you need to learn the notes, you need to figure out where your fingers go, and it's not natural. It may not even be all that exciting, but you know that you are on the road to something, and before you know it, you are playing beautiful music, but it takes practice and it takes skill. And sex is very much like that. And I actually think you were being conservative with you know, maybe a little more than half. I think most people, or maybe I could even say, and I think you'll agree with me here, everyone. I can say that. Everyone at some point in their life or in their relationship will have some sexual concern or problem.
And it may happen at midlife and beyond.
Older sexuality,
when maybe erectile dysfunction sets in, or perimenopause and menopause, where the woman is now experiencing pain with intercourse.
Because she doesn't have the estrogen.
It
could also be, as we know, one of the most common complaints that we hear is people having a difference in desire. And that's another thing that is not going to be sustainable. So when people meet each other, they may both want the same amount of sex in the same way, you know, the same frequency and the same type, because it's really easy, because we're both, you know, we're all revved up on our hormones and our neurotransmitters. But after we're with somebody for a while, that's going to change. You know, we're going to have different changes in our life. We're going to have children, and we're going to be stressed, and we're going to have loss, and we're going to have relational concerns. And there's a lot of things that are going to take place in our lives that are going to change the way we want sex and how often we want sex. And so for people to assume that they're supposed to want to have sex at the same time, as much as they each want sex, the same amount of time, in the same way, is kind of crazy. I mean, everybody is going to have what we call mismatched desire. That's natural. That's what happens.
I think you put it very well, Lori.
And I think it's really helpful for people to understand that, no, there's nothing wrong with you or your relationship because one of you wants sex more than the other. You know, that's to be expected, and it can change. You know, it might be you that wants sex more now, and there might be a time down the road where your partner might want sex more often. It becomes problematic when people start feeling bad about themselves and about each other, and before you know it, they're not having sex at all. They're just avoiding it because it's easier. They don't want to feel bad.
And then it goes on, and a year becomes 2 years, and finally after 3 years, they come in to see me, or they come in to see you, and to get the sex life jump started becomes a very difficult thing.
Yeah, and those are just the ones that we see. So like you said, those people who are making the phone call, they're halfway there. They've already decided, you know what? I don't want to live like this anymore. I want more. I want us to have a passionate sexual relationship. And so they are at a really good place. So by the time we see them, even if it's been many years since they've had sex, even if they've never had good sex, they're at least saying, hey, we both want this, and we're here to do what we can. And that's a really great thing. But how many, and I don't know this, I don't know if you have any idea, but I'm guessing it's a pretty high number. What the percentage of people that we don't hear from, you know?
I think it's very high. And
yeah, me too.
And you and I both know that a disinterest in lovemaking can escalate into a vicious cycle of frustration and ultimately alienation. I mean, they're not connecting. They're not even being affectionate because one or the other might fear that there'll be an expectation. I mean, you mentioned earlier unrealistic expectations is a huge problem.
And look, I don't know. I guess there's some people out there that it's absolutely fine. They're perfectly happy with that. I think, like you do, like you just stated, it does affect the relationship in so many ways. Because if you're not touching, that's such an important part of our intimacy and of our physical health, touch. We know how important it is. And they're not touching because they're either afraid they're going to be rejected, because that's what it's been before, or if it's the lower desire partner, they're afraid that their partner's going to think they want to have sex. So it's just easier to just not even go down that road, and how sad is that?
That's very sad, because we know that touching begets touching. It's a positive feedback loop, and it produces more oxytocin. And the more oxytocin we have generated, the better lovers we are, the better parents we are, the better grandparents we are. And, of course, oxytocin is in breast milk. It helps the mother and the baby bond.
Right, right. So it's so important. And so, you know, do I think people can live without touching and without sex? Yes. But I do think that their quality of life and certainly their relationship is compromised.
Absolutely. And sometimes when a couple is in some kind of trouble or crisis, what can help the most is to make love. And it's too bad if they don't have that option. I mean, the comfort that healthy sexual intimacy provides is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. What about people who aren't in a relationship? Do you see a lot of single people who are having sexual or relational difficulties?
I see some, and I think we should address that after the break because we're at half past the hour now.
Okay.
So I'll let Bill take us out into a break, and then we'll come back. And yes, let's talk about single people that don't have relationships.
Perfect.
And more, of course, because Dr. Laurie and I can go on and on and on.
I want you to put the mask over your face, count backwards from 100, and when you come out of it, you'll feel nothing. No, wait, that's the different kink. Okay, actually, if we go to break right here on Wiley and Sage Love, Lesson, Laughter, if you decide you want to call in and talk to two highly intelligent, very hot chicks who are geniuses, etc., call us at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. It's a toll-free number. We'll be back after this.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Town.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hey, loyal PRN listeners. Do you have any broadcast industry experience? You listen to the Progressive Radio Network. You call into the Progressive Radio Network. And now you can even host your own show on the Progressive Radio Network. PRN is looking for talented, vibrant hosts for a plethora of new shows on various topics such as college life, Caribbean music, cooking, technology, senior citizen lifestyles, classical music, different cultures of the world, and conspiracy theories. If you have experience hosting programming in radio or television, and you have a progressive point of view, we have the perfect forum for you to have your voice be heard and air your progressive thoughts. Call 646-307-4482 or send us an email at carolee@garynoel.com. carolee@garynoel.com. The Progressive Radio Network, the number one forum for progressive minds.
Krishnamurti's dialogue is between him and us.
Krishna.
Krishnamurti's talks are about the art of living, which is greater than all things that human beings have created by mind or hand.
Krishna.
It's greater than all the scriptures and their gods.
Krishna.
It is only through the art of living that a new culture can come into being.
Krishna.
All existence is relationship. Without it, you cannot live.
Krishna.
There is only the actual and nothing else.
Krishna.
What is taking place now is free of time.
Krishna.
This is the evolution of our conditioning.
Krishna.
The art of living can come into being only when thought does not contaminate love.
Krishna.
Krishnamurti talks, Thursday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Become enlightened.
Krishna.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter on PRN. And our guest today is the lovely, talented, super hot chick, Dr. Lori Buckley, and the lovely, talented, super hot chick who actually hosts the show. She's not a guest, but she could be a best guest at our home and your home anytime, because she's just that kind of a guest. She won't start to smell after 3 days like fish.
Oh.
This is Ben Franklin's Retro. I think I set the Heisenberg Retro Decompensator on forward to foot in the mouth too fast. But anyway, I'm back in the coffee. Actually, I'm exhausted from the show, but that's not this show, but I'm doing a live show in Honolulu, and so lots of performance and very little sleep. So don't worry about me. It's just my underbrain substituting for me today. Rescue me, Dr. Diana.
Thank you, Billy Sage. So just before the break, we were talking about perhaps single people who are not in a relationship. And Dr. Lori, I was over the break, I was reflecting on a single female client. And she just loved the perpetual bad boy. Mm. And it was almost like she would say, with your good loving, you could fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, she really knew how to be a caretaker, but she didn't have a clue about how to be cared for. And so that made us reflect on some of her duties and responsibilities. And the caretaker, of course, has plenty to do. She gets to met out advice, comfort, and reassurance while listening to endless tales of woe. The one to be cared for can surrender and allow others in, but the caretaker has to be in control,
mm-hmm.
and she has to stay strong, loyal, selfless, and always available. So being in control is very appealing to the caretaker. And by the way, this particular woman that I'm describing had also experienced sexual trauma in her youth. So it was very important for her to stay in control.
Right, right, yeah.
But
there's also, I think, an element of people-pleasing, you know, getting the
mm-hmm.
person who's the caretaker. Somewhere along the line, they got a message that to get love, they needed to manage other people. They needed to care for other people. They needed to be, you know, perfect and sort of manage things in that way to get what they really wanted, which was love, which was an illusion. But certainly there was a message that they got there somewhere along the line that's hard to shake.
It's hard to shake.
Yeah.
So what about you, single people who are seeing you and they would like to have a relationship, but they're just not sure how to
I'm seeing a lot of it, and I actually talked about this on one of my shows. I believe it was last week. We were talking about, you know, with the new technology and dating websites and those kinds of things going on and you know, Facebook's, you know, so the social networking, as wonderful as it is to connect, at the same time, it's kind of created this sort of throwaway society in the sense that, oh, there's hundreds, thousands out there, and it's just, you know, the click of my mouse or a button to find someone else I can go out with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this idea, these expectations that we're supposed to find that one, the one who has everything in common with us, who's, you know, a certain height and has a certain boob size and certain color hair and certain way of being and certain types of income. And so we have this list. Many people have this laundry list of what they want in a partner, and when they don't, they meet somebody and they don't have that, it's like, oh, okay, I'll just go to the next person because I have at my fingertips, you know, these thousands of potential people to go out with. And it's problematic, I believe, and I'm hearing it from a lot of my single clients that are very frustrated. They'll go out with somebody and they think that it was really a nice connection. They enjoyed themselves. They felt that the other person enjoyed themselves. And then, you know, the person will inevitably, you know, say something like, well, you know, I just didn't really feel that chemistry. Or they'll just blow them off entirely. And it's hard to kind of live with that. I mean, what do you do with that? How do people actually connect to people in a way that they want? And the people that I'm seeing want a deep, connected, committed even relationship, although they may have that down the line, and they're having a lot of trouble finding that. And it's not even about sex as much as having that connection with somebody. And I'm finding a lot of frustration. I'm hearing a lot of frustration from my clients around that.
I'm hearing the same thing. I'm living out the same thing.
Right.
Because I've been a widow now for several years, and I'm on Match.com. I've been on eHarmony, and it's kind of nice to get a fair amount of attention. You know, because I have a theater and modeling background. I have.
And you're gorgeous. I mean,
well,
you know, look at your well, you are.
No, but I have some pretty good pictures, even though they are current. A couple are a couple years old, but others are current. And so, and then I learned how to write the profile in an upbeat way, in an honest way, and so it attracts a fair amount of attention. But since I had such an amazing marriage, and Billy Sage knows this from our days in Hawaii with Charlie, and so I've become very picky. But when you say,
so you're at the other end, you're the one saying, "Nah, you don't." You're not going to match. But look at, you have had something. You were so fortunate to have such a wonderful man and a wonderful relationship. You certainly don't want to settle for less than that, right?
And I don't want to settle, but I think I also don't want to be alone for the rest of my life, because I really like being married. I like regular committed sex. I really do. But I also would perhaps rather be alone than with the wrong man.
Right.
So it's a bit of a dilemma, and in the meantime, I'm dating and mostly having fun.
that's the answer.
Yeah.
Go out there, you know, this isn't about having to find someone to marry. Go out there, have a good time. And I always say, you know, it's better to be alone than be with someone and wish you were. You know, that's
and to feel trapped. To feel trapped in the wrong marriage is awful.
Yeah, when you're laying in bed next to somebody and you're feeling lonely, that's a much worse feeling than laying in bed alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? And the next telephone call could change everything if you're single.
You're right.
Or the next match that comes through on the internet. But it's a balance, isn't it? That's what we're talking about. It's maybe having realistic expectations and not having this, what you call, and I think it's very appropriate, Lori, the throwaway society.
Yeah, and it's also about, you know, it's a mindfulness thing as well.
Oh, yeah.
Really being where you are and enjoying where you are. I mean, I know a woman who I love her, and she is in her 50s. She's never been married, and she describes herself as happily single. And she is. She says, you know, she talks to many of her friends who are, you know, in marriages that are not exactly happy. And she says she listens to her friends complain about their marriages and their relationships. And, you know, she could sit around and complain about being alone, but she says she has wonderful friends that she spends time with. She loves her job. She travels. She, you know, spends time with family, friends, doing the things that she loves to do. And she really is truly, truly happy. She would like to be in a relationship if one should come along. But how does she say? She said she hasn't met her match. She hasn't found someone that she is willing to give anything up for if it's not exactly what she wants. Now, are her expectations too high? Maybe. But in the meantime, you know, she's enjoying her life, and I think that's all we can do. And this goes for people in a relationship, too, because it's real easy to sit around and complain about the things you're not getting from your partner and the things that are wrong with your partner, because there are things wrong with your partner. And, by the way, they've got their list of your flaws as well. I mean, look, none of us are perfect. And
none of us are perfect, and
right.
We also have to remember.
Except for Billy, maybe.
Oh.
What? Except for Billy.
Somebody said none of us are perfect. Oh, no.
Abel Vienna, doctor.
So what were you saying?
Well, I think that it's very important in a coupleship to not blame, to take responsibility. And don't you find as a therapist that you often have to get the people to stop blaming each other?
Oh, I mean, you know, they come in and they want us to fix their partner. If only their partner were more of this or less of this or did this or didn't do that, then they would be happy. And everyone feels that way at some level, but the truth is we need to act like a loving partner. We need to do the things that we want done for us, and what we will have, and it's like what we said before, we will have that kind of partner, and at least more of, and when we are accepting of them, even with their flaws, and we are living our lives and appreciative of what we have, rather than focusing on what we don't, we're going to be happier, whether we're single or in a relationship.
Wow, you say it so well, Dr. Lori Buckley. You say it so well.
Well, thank you, but it's true, right?
Yes, it's true.
You know, you've got lots of people who love you, and I know there's lots of men who would love to be with you.
Oh, thank you.
And while you may not want to marry them or even have a committed relationship with them, I have no doubt that you're having a good time with them, right?
Yeah. My daughter said an interesting thing to me. My daughter is in her early 30s, and, well, in fact, she just turned 2 days ago, 34, and she's in this really happy marriage with a guy she met through eHarmony because he's Canadian, and at the time she met him and I told her to join eHarmony, she was in Oregon and he's in Victoria, B.C. It's one reason I moved to Seattle, because I wanted to be closer. Anyway, they had a baby 4 months ago, this darling, my first biological grandson.
You're a grandmother. How cute.
Oh, and he's so cute. He's just so adorable.
Oh.
And, but my daughter said something interesting. She hadn't heard from me for a few days, and she said, well, whenever you're involved with a man, I don't hear as much from you. And I wasn't involved with a man, but I was just busy.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we get involved in a new relationship, we do kind of get carried away with it, which is a wonderful thing. Look at
yes,
that
it is
such a great feeling when you can be with somebody new and have that longing for feeling, and you're just, you know, you're so into each other. It is the best, and it doesn't last. It doesn't last.
No, all the stuff that Helen Fisher talks about, lots of testosterone with the lust and lots of dopamine with the romantic love, the hormone of arousal, and it doesn't last, but you should enjoy it while it lasts, and then try to take it into the next phase. Billy, you have something to say about this.
Somebody called it being love-stoned.
Love-stoned.
Yeah. You're under the influence for sure, and it's the best drug out there. I mean, let's face it.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I do think that people in relationships, I actually wrote an article about this, they can fall back in love again. It may not feel exactly the same way, but it actually can feel better. Different, but equally as good, if not even better, because you have that closeness. But it is about that intention. It is about doing things a little bit differently and maybe doing them a little bit of the same like you used to do when you were courting each other for lack of a better word. I know that sort of dates me, but I still like that term courting. We all want to be courted and seduced,
right? I do too.
Yeah.
Yes. We all want to be courted and paid attention to and complimented. You know, I talk about, you know, women often saying, make love to me in my ear. I need the compliments. I need the words. I need the positives.
Oral pleasures, A-U-R-A-L, right?
Yeah, A-U-R-A-L.
Am I spelling it right?
Yes, no, that's exactly right. And,
yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, there's nothing better than that.
And I also call it emotional foreplay.
And we need that. We need it at the beginning. We need it in the middle. We need it at the end. We all want to feel cherished and adored and desired, men and women.
I love the word cherished.
Yeah.
It's an old-fashioned word, but it's a beautiful word.
It really is. And, it's an important word in Tantra. And I know
more about that, Lori.
Yeah, so we both have talked about this briefly, but Tantra is another way to approach sex and to enhance people's sexual relationship. And it really is about the cherishing, not just of your partner, but of your own sexuality and your own body. And it really comes from that place of cherishing and connection.
Mm-hmm.
So while there's that erotic piece that is fun, you know, to spice things up and try new things, that's always a good thing. There's also that really embracing the comfortable, the familiar, in a way that expands that to something huge, that connection, that cherishing, that adoration, that being so connected. I mean, that's hot. It
that's
really
very
is.
Hot. And I know that with tantric sex, that good sex is intentional, not spontaneous, that
exactly.
mutual passion is a practice.
Mm-hmm,
you can mm-hmm. have with fun, and you can get better at it, like yoga or meditation.
Right, like we talked about, it's a skill, right?
It's a skill.
Yeah,
and how about one of the homework assignments, or even in the office, is soul gazing. The couple
right.
looks into each other's eyes, they touch hands, and they breathe in sync. To merge the energy of the heart and the pelvis chakras.
It's powerful stuff, really powerful stuff. Yeah, and not just, I mean, it's not just the looking in each other's eyes, which I think is powerful all by itself,
mm-hmm.
but when you are looking at and being looked at in such an intense way and you can see the love in their eyes,
yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, that can bring people, and often does, bring people to tears. And like,
I've seen it in my office.
Right? Yeah. And, you know,
yes.
oftentimes we're not looking at each other with love in our eyes.
I know. It's an amazing, amazing exercise. And I combine that with what I call sweet nothings, where the couple sits knee to knee, holding hands, doing the eye gazing. And then after they do that, saying sweet nothings, saying positives, saying complimentary things.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great exercise.
And then there's another one.
I'm so lucky to have you to go to.
Oh, well, you too, honey. You too. But there's another one.
Yes.
And
I got a sidekick for you, darling?
Okay, what is that, Billy?
Have I got a sidekick for you, darling? Oh, he's wonderful. He obeys. He doesn't interrupt too much. Sits there. He's faithful. He can love, peer, and chase from afar. Oh, wait, that's not what you want. Okay, never mind.
You know, I have couples that haven't touched for so long because of this sexual alienation and they just haven't.
An emotional alienation.
And emotional,
right?
Physical
yeah.
and emotional. So then I get them to play patty cake as a starter.
Oh, my God, that's great.
And then I get them to say, this is just, you know, for some of these couples that have been so distant and not touching.
Well, patty cake. They're touching and they're being playful.
And they're being playful,
idea.
Yes. So then they get to greet each other just with their hands. And then they get to say goodbye to each other. And then I get them to say goodbye to each other, knowing that they're going to have 25 years apart. And then sit with that a minute and then greet each other after 25 years. Recently I did this, and the husband, who hasn't had sex with his wife for a long time, he started to cry.
Oh.
He started to cry right there because he realized how much they have this wonderful friendship, but
mm-hmm.
they just don't have a sex life. And in part it's because of her pain with intercourse, but they have such a close relationship. But he started to cry as he got in touch with how awful it would be for her to be out of his life for 25 years.
How wonderful for them to experience that. That's a great exercise. I'm going to have to try that one. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do sort of take each other and the relationship for granted. And to if they could actually get into that space of imagining that they were apart that long, I mean, it sounds like that could be really healing. And it was for them, right?
It was for them, and we, of course, talked about it.
Yeah, isn't
all
that
right, so
great
Lori,
about what we do, right? We get to see people right in front of us in a moment, their lives and their relationship can change.
I know, and that's why we love our work so much.
Oh, we love
it.
I'm
so
doing
passionate about it.
The day I take my last breath, I'll be doing it. I love it. And
you know, I agree. And how about this? Let's talk about this before the show is over. To personalize this, and I'll tell you what happens for me, and then I'd love to hear what happens for you.
Okay.
As soon as people find out I'm a sex therapist, oftentimes their eyes light up. They're
mm-hmm.
either intimidated, thinking I must know everything.
Right, like you can look into their eyes and tell if they're having sex or not.
Exactly. And sometimes
I can't.
or they're just plain curious. The most basic thing I've learned as a sex therapist is that everyone has a question about sex.
Yep.
And so if you're comfortable with the topic, then they often want to ask you something.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, if I'm at an event, you know, whether it's a business thing or any kind of an event where there's people gathering and they find out what I do, it seems like, you know, they just kind of start hanging out with me. Like they want to sit at my table, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you know, certainly before you know it, by the end of the night, you know, they're asking questions. And they just, it's like, oh, here's an opportunity to find out some information. And people want it. People want this information. And so what's so great, you know, you have this great show that is filled with great information for people to listen to, good information, because we know that there's no shortage of information. It's just that not all of it is helpful. As a matter of fact, some of it can even be harmful, that misinformation.
Exactly, and that's why you do radio and I do radio. Let's tell people, you please tell people about how they can tune into your show where you give out good, solid information, honest information. So
my
tell
show
us about.
Is it's on LA Talk Radio, and you can find me on iTunes. You can also find me on Stitcher Radio. If you want to listen to any archive shows, you can go to sexystufflive.com. So it's sexystufflive.com. And, I interview fabulous people just like you do. As a matter of fact, you're going to be on my show in the near future.
Yes.
Probably in about a month or two. I'm looking forward to that. So I like you, get really great, intelligent, fun, informed people, and we talk about sex and relationships. So it's very similar. One of these other things that we have in common, I think we both like performing, whether it's on camera or with a mic, and we also are both passionate about helping people and giving them this information.
And we both have some lingering performing needs.
Yes.
Because we have a background in, mine's in theater and a little bit in television and films, you know, without having my sex therapist hat on.
Right. Mine has been mostly around this, but it started very young. I've always had that need for attention. So.
Yeah, we all do, yeah.
Yeah. And
that makes
know,
us a little
fun.
Bit
it's
exhibitionistic.
There you go, yeah. And why not? So have a good time and help people at the same time. It's all good, right?
It's all good. And, I'm just so happy to be able to meet those lingering performing needs by doing something as important as getting out good, solid information on the radio.
And you do a really great job. I listen
and
to some
so
of your
do
shows.
You.
It's great stuff, and I so appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, Lori, I appreciate it. Billy, you have something to say, I suspect.
Well, yes, I appreciate being on the show, too. And as a matter of fact, once again, if you would like to get in touch with Dr. Buckley, you can go to sexystufflive.com. That's a good website to find more about on the LA Talk Radio circuit. And drlauriebuckley.com, another additional website where you can find her. And, of course, you can find us right here on PRN because that's where we happen to be at the moment. There are still a couple of minutes to wrap up, so I shall defer to the learned colleagues of mine, also known as Hot Sexy Chicks.
Thank you, Billy.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Billy. He's great. You know, we haven't talked about older sexuality too much. But, of course, as you know, that's been my specialty for a long time.
Yeah, and it's an important topic because there's no reason that people need to stop being sexual.
Absolutely
not. No reason
not.
At all. Yeah.
And ideally, the empty nest then becomes the love nest. Ideally.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, a lot of older people let food take the place of sex. And
mm-hmm.
Billy, listen closely to this because I want you to repeat it with Rodney Dangerfield's voice. And he says, I'm at the age where food has taken the place of sex in my life. In fact, I've just had a mirror put over my kitchen table. Okay, Billy, here's your chance.
I'm at the age where food has taken the place of sex in my life. I just had a mirror placed over the kitchen table. I tell you, I said, waiter, take it back. And she said, I'll give it back. I tell you, no respect at all. I asked my wife, is there sex after death? She said, hang on, I'll get a gun.
I have a feeling Billy could go on for a while. It reminds me of a refrigerator magnet I used to have. Let's see if I can remember it. But it said something like, I've been replacing sex with food, and I've gained so much weight I can't get into my own pants.
Oh, dear.
Somehow I think I misquoted it, but it was very funny.
We get the idea. So, Dr. Lori Buckley, thank you so much for being our guest today, and you've been so informative and fun. And just...
And I have to tell both of you ladies, if you're already prettier, just looking at you would give me a beauty cramp.
A what?
A beauty cramp.
A beauty cramp.
Well, thank you, Dr. Diana. It has been a pleasure, and thank you, Billy, for all of your entertaining and kind comments. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you again. And, Billy, tell listeners that we'll have Brad Coates, Part 2, next week.
Brad Coates, Part 2, the author of Divorce with Decency, a fine, internationally acclaimed attorney who is actually one of those guys, an attorney you wouldn't want to kill because some attorneys are actually not only human beings but really great guys. And we'll
and
have
he's
Brad
one
Coates,
of them.
Part 2.
Yep.
He's also a mammal with opposable thumbs, so there you got it all.
Okay, thanks, Billy. Thanks,
Alrighty.
Dr. Lori.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
We'll see you all next week. Aloha.